Okay, great. Thanks, Art. Good thing everyone can hear me. So my name is Robin DeYoung. I work in the State and Local Climate and Energy Program. I started at EPA in January 2010, and I work with state and local governments, helping them with technical assistance and quantifying greenhouse gas emissions, criteria, air pollutant emissions for different projects. So today I'm going to talk about two different examples, how state and local governments have used and really touch on how state and local governments have used eGRID for specific analysis. So first I'll discuss how EPA has helped New Mexico estimate the energy and emissions impact of an adopted energy efficiency resource standard. Then I'll show you how the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission has quantified their greenhouse gas emissions related to their electricity consumption for their regional greenhouse gas emissions inventory, as well as their electricity reductions from their LED change out program. So right now at EPA, we're focusing our resources to help state and local governments incorporate energy efficiency and renewable energy policies and programs into their state implementation plan. And a while back, New Mexico expressed interest in learning how to do this, particularly for the upcoming ozone air quality standards expected to be finalized this summer. So EPA staff from Region 6 and headquarters in the Office of Air and Radiation, we all came together and to start providing technical assistance to New Mexico. And one of the first steps in the process is to estimate the potential magnitude of emission reductions that may account for, that they could account for in their forthcoming ozone SIP. I should note that it's unclear which areas in New Mexico, if any, will be designated non-attainment for the new ozone standard until the rule is finalized. So this effort is really just to help New Mexico be prepared prior to final rule promulgation. We've been analyzing multiple energy efficiency and renewable energy policies and programs with New Mexico, but for today, I'm going to focus on New Mexico's energy efficiency resource standard. And in 2008, New Mexico adopted the Efficiency Use of Energy Act, where in House Bill 305, it requires investor-owned utilities to achieve a 10% reduction from 2005 total retail electricity sales by 2020. And it was really important for us to refer, it's always important to refer directly to the Energy Efficiency Resource Standard statute and any regulations that came out of that. And that helped us start putting together the pieces to estimate the energy impact from the law. And we highly recommend in all cases to getting in touch with your public regulatory commission at the state level if there are any uncertainties or nuances within the law, and to ensure that you have correct assumptions. And it's good to build those relationships. So the next slide is I'm going to do a tiered approach on how you would estimate the energy impact, or how we estimated the energy impact of New Mexico's energy efficiency resource standard. So first, we identified the affected entities. It's important to know which utilities are subject to the rule. And in this case, based on the last slide and the rule, how the rule is read, investor-owned utilities were the affected entities. There are normally three main categories. There's the investor-owned utilities, municipal utilities, or cooperative utilities. Next, we identified the investor-owned utilities that were located within the state, and these are the three investor-owned utilities that we found. This information could be found from the Public Regulatory Commission, the Energy Information Administration, and eGRID has that information as well. For step two, we identified the base year for which the law refers to, and this will be the baseline year we obtain total retail electricity sales. So 2005 is that base year, and then that moves us to the next step, step three, to from 2005, We obtain the electricity sales for each of the investor-owned utilities, which you can see directly below each of the utility names. And the total utility sales in 2005 from these three investor-owned utilities was 12.9 million megawatt hours. And I provided a source here on the left-hand side where you can easily look at, do a lookup on an EIA on their tables. So, and then the last step is really just easy math, where you take 10% of the total retail sales in 2005 and estimate the savings we should expect in 2020, which was is 1.29 million megawatt hours. So basically, we took the rule and the statute, and then we applied how it was applicable, and we came up with these estimated energy impacts. And electricity savings that we should see in 2020. So now that you have, now that we have the electricity savings resulting from the energy efficiency resource standard, the next step was to obtain emissions and plant information from EGRID. And what we found is, as we mine through EGRID, is that there can be multiple plants generating electricity for each investor-owned utility. And what I really liked about EGRID is that it's very easy to drill down from the operator-owner level all the way to the point of to the unit level, at the boiler level. So for this analysis, we looked to see if all of the plants that were connected to the investor-owned utility, which EGRID subregion they were in. And we found that every plant that these IOUs used to operate electricity are all in the EGRID subregion AVNM. Sorry, that should be NM, not MN. And there's one plant, Luna Energy Facility, who is not in this subregion, but just for simplification purposes, since we're only estimating the magnitude of emission reductions, we're just going to use one subregion for now. Okay, so these are the two different quantification approaches that I'll go through. The first is EGRID subregion using the AZNM average non-baseload emissions rate. And you'll notice that we're using the average non-baseload emissions rate in this analysis because this rate more closely coincides with the power plants that would most likely reduce generation from the ERS policy, as Art mentioned earlier. Hitting that point home. This is just an illustration to show you which subregion, subregion we're looking at for this analysis. Next slide is just a summary of the non-baseload output emission rate. And a little bit more detail about what non-baseload emission rates represent. It's the generation from all plants within this region that most likely would change generation as electricity demand changes in the region. And what it omits is that it does not have emissions from plants that generally operate all hours of the day because the operating costs are low and these plants are not suitable for responding to demand fluctuations. And those types of plants are generally called baseload plants. And I also wanted to mention on a side note that you can actually see a pretty huge difference between the NOx emission rates and CO2 emission rates. So I thought that was interesting. Okay, next slide is now we're getting into the actual equation that we would use. We have all the data. We have the electricity sales saved from the ERF. We have the EGRID emissions rate after we look through all the plant data. And we also, in EGRID, have a grid loss factor. So you multiply those together. I supply the units that you would use in this equation. And then I have an example here of how you would apply the, how you would get NOx emissions. So for the New Mexico ERS in 2020, we estimated that 705 tons of NOx emissions would be avoided as a result of this energy efficiency policy. And then on this slide is a table that shows how much emission, total emissions would be avoided from the New Mexico Energy Efficiency Resource Standard in 2020. And you can, and these are annual numbers. So if you think about it, if you added up each year savings from the beginning of the policy implementation to 2020, you'd even see more savings if you did it on a cumulative level or cumulative basis. And here I've listed some benefits and limitations to using the E-GRID approach, the average non-base load emissions rate approach. It's very, you can see here, it's very easy back of the envelope type estimate. The non-base load output emission rates reflect the plants that would most likely get displaced through E-GRID region. It is important to note that not all the New Mexico plants are included. You can't really do anything that in terms of future looking. We don't know what types of plants will be online or retired in 2020, so it is a static analysis. It doesn't show where the EGUs would be displaced, which would be important when we do go deeper for the SIP implementation. And EGRID, the approach assumes the policy, the New Mexico policy will affect all non-base load plants equally. Okay, so now let's get into the other approach, which is an EGRID plant level data using capacity factors. And this is a little more of a rigorous analysis compared to the first example. So a capacity factor is an indicator for how likely a plant is to be displaced from an energy efficiency or renewable energy policy. And basically what it is a ratio for how much a power plant generates within a given time frame compared to the maximum continuous generation capacity within that same time frame. And what EGRID does, it assigns annual capacity factors for each power plant, and it is also possible to calculate the capacity factors during the ozone season. You'd have to do that offline, but the information is there in EGRID to do. So you could have two different capacity factors, ozone season versus non-ozone season, especially. It's especially important if we're looking at how New Mexico could use this information to comply with their ozone, with the ozone standards. And then below are two contrasting examples to help illustrate this concept a little bit better. So if an EGU or a power plant has a high capacity factor, for example, above 80%, then that could mean this plant is operating at least 80% of its maximum capacity. And it's pretty safe to say that this type of plant is a baseload plant, where it won't fluctuate generation in response to changes in demand. And then on the other hand, the other end of the spectrum, you also have EGUs or power plants with low capacity factors, below 20%, let's say. And that means that this generator is generating much less than its maximum capacity. And it is pretty safe to say on this side that it is one of the first generators to be displaced in response to lower demand on the electric system. So now that you guys have a better understanding of what a capacity factor is, I have this capacity factor rule of thumb, and then I've applied it to the plants that we identified as the ones that are affected by the energy efficiency resource standard. So on the left-hand side is a sample curve for relating generation displacement to capacity factor. On the x-axis is the capacity factor, and on the y-axis is the percentage of a plant's generation that could be displaced. And so you see that linear relationship. And then on the right-hand side are the plants associated with the investor-owned utilities, like I said. And I've lined them up based on their capacity factor, their annual capacity factor that I found in EGRID. And so this rule of thumb is an indicator to determine how much emissions could be displaced from each of these plants. And so based on this rule of thumb, you could say about the plants in the blue section could be 100% displaced based on as a result of the energy efficiency resource standard. And then the plants in the purple section would be displaced using a linear relationship to the capacity factor and the displaceability shown in the graph on the left. And then even though the San Juan plant isn't up to 80% capacity factor, we could say, that is the highest plant, so most likely that wouldn't be displaced. All the other plants would be displaced before that. It's really important to note that this is just for explanatory purposes only, and that a complete capacity factor analysis would include all plants within the multiple power control areas to properly capture the policy impacts within this electric grid. So this is a very simplified approach just to explain how the capacity factor could be used. And so what our next steps will be with New Mexico is that we'll be looking at a wider analysis of all the plants within the entire AZNM E-grid subregion. And that would be, getting closer to a more complete analysis. So I don't have any emissions here to show you. Just wanted to give you a feel for the capacity factor approach. And then I list out a couple of different benefits and limitations of the capacity factor approach using EGRID. For example, emissions could be assigned to each power plant after you get all the capacity factors lined up. So you would figure out how much generation or how much savings would happen. You have, the 1.2 million megawatt hours of savings, and then you'd start assigning the amount of savings to each of the different plants. And then you could figure out how much emissions would be reduced for each plant. It's relatively easy to calculate this if you take a little time to set up the infrastructure, but after that, it's fairly easy. This is still considered a simplified approach, assuming that the power plants have the same capacity factor throughout the year. And then I said you could also get an ozone season versus non-ozone season capacity factor. It also doesn't account for maintenance or outages. Exported power is not considered here, which can be important depending on the area you're looking at. And also important to note, it assumes all energy savings or generation affects all the peaking units first, and it doesn't affect any of the baseload generation. And sometimes that's not true, when you look at, if you're just looking at lighting programs or like wind power, for example. So those are important factors to keep in mind when you're doing this approach. It is simplified, and there are some limitations. Okay, now I'm going to switch gears to a local example using EGRID. And the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission's Office of Energy and Climate Change Initiative, they lead, support, and coordinate efforts to reduce energy consumption and greenhouse gas emissions in their region. And right now, they're supporting a goal to reduce regional greenhouse gas emissions 50% by 2035. So first I'll go over how they quantified the electricity consumption for their greenhouse gas emissions inventory, and then I'll move into the LED change-out program. So another EGRID subregion map that shows the area of analysis this time around. We're looking at the RFC East subregion. And on the right-hand side, lower right-hand side, you can see the total average emission rate that we're using. And so since this analysis, another note is that since this analysis was for 2005 inventory, these are the 2005 greenhouse gas emission rates. And we're using the total average emission rate so that we can capture emissions from all the power plants within the region. This is an inventory. And again, everything falls within one region, so it's a pretty clean approach. So to calculate the indirect emissions from electricity consumption, what DVRPC did is that they used the these following equations for each greenhouse gas. And so for this approach, you'd get CO2, methane, and nitrous oxide emissions separately. You'd multiply the electricity consumption times the average egret subregion emissions rate, and you get your emissions for 2005. Alternatively, and you know, unless they want to use Power Pro, or unless they want to use your the tool that does the CO2 equivalent for you, which is available for 07, right? But alternatively, if you don't have that option, or you want to do it yourself, you could calculate the CO2 equivalent of the greenhouse gas inventory. And sometimes this might be easier for a community if to communicate the impacts of their inventory. So, because then you only have one number, you only have one greenhouse gas emissions number. But you'll have to do some additional steps on in the front end. So the general approach would be to multiply the emissions rate times sometimes you need an energy conversion factor, and then you would multiply by a global warming potential. And I have the units here in the equation. I have some helpful conversions. And on this next slide, I give you the details of exactly how this would be applied. So to get the net emissions rate, CO2 emissions rate, that doesn't change. We're keeping that the same. And then for the methane and nitrous oxide, you would multiply you can see here, for example, for methane, you have the 30.3 pounds per gigawatt hour is their emissions rate. And if you want to turn that into megawatt hours, you need this conversion factor. And then you multiply 21, which is the global warming potential, and you get the CO2 equivalent emissions rate by doing that for methane. And then you apply the same method for nitrous oxide. And then after you get the equivalent emission rate for methane and nitrous oxide, then you add the CO2 emissions rate with the methane emissions rate and the nitrous oxide emissions rate. I applied the grid loss factor here, so it's 1 over 1 minus the grid loss factor to capture that loss. And in total, we have 1,224 pounds of CO2 equivalent per megawatt hour. So there's your net emissions rate. And then after you get that, you would calculate the total regional greenhouse gas emissions from electricity consumption. And DVRPC found through their analysis that there's about 54,000 gigawatt hours of electricity consumed in their 9-county region. And you go through the calculation, and you get 30.1 million metric tons of CO2 that are attributed to their region's electricity consumption that would be input into their inventory. So that's how you do, that's how DVRPC did their greenhouse gas calculations. And then lastly, we have a LED changeout program. And DVRPC estimated the CO2 savings from a region-wide LED program as a part of their application for an EPA Climate Showcase Communities grant in the summer of 2010. And so since this is a rough estimate of projected savings, the simplified approach was a good approach, and they just used CO2 emissions, and they didn't account for gridlock factors. So, you know, if you're estimating things, you don't have to cross all your T's and dot all your I's. And here's what they thought would happen. Their goal is to change out 10,000 incandescent traffic lights for LEDs, and they're projected to save 3,000 megawatt hours annually. They use the non-base load CO2 factor because this is changing emissions, changing demand. And then they estimated, and this is how they estimated their CO2 emissions. You can see the calculation below. So that's all I have on the different programs. And for the next technical forum, we are actually going to have a three-part series that is going to take different pieces of the assessing the multiple benefits of clean energy resource that EPA put out in February 2010. And so the first webinar is going to talk a little bit more about, you know, how the electrical grid works and a little bit more sophistication on how to get energy impacts from clean energy policies, how to figure that out. Then the next webinar we're planning will look at more complex emissions quantification methodologies. As a result of clean energy policies or programs, so we'll do some more displaced emissions approaches. And then the third webinar series, we'll show quantification methodologies or estimations of the economic benefits of clean energy policies and programs. So we'll touch on how to estimate jobs being saved or gained, money saved or avoided from these policies. And so we're hoping that, you know, looking at all these different benefits will help you in making the case for your clean energy policy program. We also have a survey at the end of this webinar, and it would be really helpful if you could answer those questions, and that will help inform us in getting the information that you really want and need in this next series. My contact information, and I want to thank everyone again for participating today, and I think we're ready for any additional questions.